Welcome to the podcast, Chatting with Brad and Doug. This is Doug.
And this is Brad.
And today's episode of Chatting with Brad and Doug is focusing on a character who is very near and dear to our hearts. It's been a podcast long in the making, and I'm very excited about this one. Would you like to get into it, Bradley?
Yeah, today we're going to be focusing on a guy named Lazarus Long, amongst many other names. He's from Robert Heinlein's novels, Time Enough for Love, is the one we're going to be talking about, but he's also in the main character in the novel, Methuselah's Children, which is kind of it's actually the work he was introduced in and all the rest, but Time Enough for Love is kind of like an exposition into this guy's character, and the whole book is about him and his life. And the important thing to know about this character is that, you know, Robert Heinlein obviously wrote sci-fi, and I think, and so the character that he presents is one who has lived for now thousands of years. And he's been there to witness, you know, the late 20th century, or, you know, he was born in 1914. And so he's witnessed the 20th century and into the 21st and 22nd century when humans start to expand to other worlds, and so he's kind of always been on the frontier and been doing new things and has kind of done every profession available. You know, he's a ship's captain, he runs a brothel on Mars, he's a priest, he does all sorts of things.
And he's a fantastic storyteller, because that's a huge part of the narrative. That's, I mean, in many ways, this is his story. This is his song. And also, in very early on in the text, he is referred to as the hero and driving force of human exodus. So, as mankind reaches outward and towards the stars, Lazarus Long is, you know, just kind of the driving force and the push, the prompt. And, I mean, so yeah, he's special in that capacity as well. And, I mean, I first read this book a very long time ago. I think I was in high school at the time, so maybe about like 8 years ago. And it's still, you know, this character, this story, you know, has stuck with me. And, you know, Robert Heinlein is, I mean, obviously his stories, I mean, not just this one, I mean, absolutely this one, but so many of his stories are classic, and there's still something so fresh and wonderful and just absolutely amazing about him. It's like you go through one book and it's, you just want to keep seeing what else is out there. I mean, he's an author to be, whose books are to be devoured and to savor and enjoy. And there's just so many wonderful, you know, stories out there that, you know, just, I mean, they've made a difference to me in my life. And I mean, I know they have for you too, Bradley, obviously.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Time Enough for Love was a book that I read and I didn't want to, you know, when you get to the end of it, you don't want it to end because you've loved it so much. Was the way I really felt about it, is that like, you just didn't, you wanted it to keep going. You wanted to hear more, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously the book has to end at some point. And it was just a book that really changed me as a person, I would say, in a way that not many books are, but strangely enough, a lot of Robert Heinlein's books can do. You know, I think that, you know, Doug and I have read a lot of Robert Heinlein over the years. I think, you know, just to do a service to the author who both Doug and I love, you know, he's a sci-fi author in the extent that his settings are, you know, take place usually in the future, and take place, you know, in strange settings. But the books are always still about characters and,
you know, human characters too. I don't want to interrupt you, but, you know, they're humans.
There's only one Robert Heinlein book I can think of that has aliens in it, and they're not particularly important.
And, you know, there's robots and artificial intelligences and that kind of stuff, but it's really, you know, they're very human tales. And yeah, there's, you know, technology and, you know, weird settings and whatnot, but I mean, he's just a great storyteller. Like, if you're getting, I mean, a lot of people give science fiction a bad rap because they say it's all about technology. It's, you know, all about weird stuff going on, but, you know, just, they haven't read Robert Heinlein because his are just pure stories with great characters. And,
you know, you look at a book like Time Enough for Love, and none of the book takes place on Earth, but you'd hardly notice that because most of the time they're inside or, you know, in someone's house, and it just happens to be, you know, they create a planet for the express purpose of, you know, having a setting that's a certain way. Some of it takes place on spaceships, but, you know, it doesn't really come in the plot, you know, you just, you never once does he attempt to actually explain to you how anything works. You know, he just says, yeah, they can travel through, you know, they can travel between planets. And even over the course of the book, Lazarus Long invents time travel. And, okay, he's invented time travel now. Now we're going to go time traveling in the books. You know, time traveling the rest of the book. And I think to that extent, it makes it a whole lot different. You know, if you look at some of it, you know, some of Robert Heinlein's other books, you know, for example, Stranger in a Strange Land, the book is only sci-fi to the extent that it's examining a character who is completely foreign to human society and is then entered into it. And the foreignness to it is that he was raised by Martians, and then moves to Earth and has to live with humans.
I mean, yeah, like, I don't know if maybe, you know, like, I guess he's almost technically a fantasy author. I know that Glory Road is certainly a fantasy novel in
Yeah, I'm
in
actually reading
ways.
That right now.
And what do you think?
So far, so good.
it's a great book.
The description of Star in the beginning is just outstanding.
I don't remember it exactly. I mean, I know she's very beautiful. I mean,
right when the character first meets Star. I'm sorry to digress to another book, but when you first meet her, the way they describe the way she looks, and all the rest is just pretty amazing.
I mean, and there, like that right there, what you just said, like it's all about, you know, humanity, the human characters. I mean,
right.
And that's,
he's in the French Riviera, and you don't know really that it's sci-fi at all at that point. Like, I was not sure it was sci-fi or fantasy until it became very obvious.
Yeah. I mean, there's absolutely no reason, like, we don't need to defend Robert Heinlein. His works absolutely speak for themselves, but, you know, it's just, I think that there is, I mean, whether we like it or not, and I don't like it, there is this reputation that science fiction, it's been going on for a very long time, that it's all about, you know, just sort of weird stuff going on, that, you know, unless there's, like, some kind of, you know, character that, you know, really, like, it needs to have some kind of human tale, or that kind of stuff going on, like, then there's no real point. But, like, you know, you, like...
And that would be Arthur C. Clarke. I mean, he's a great author, but I'm not particularly a big fan for that reason.
It's more about the technology is, you know...
Yes.
Like, with Arthur C. Clarke and whatnot. But, you know, again, Robert Heinlein, it's like, if... It's just great storytelling. Like, there's lots of... It's science fiction, it's fantasy, it's... I mean, I heard somebody argue that it was magical realism to a small degree, but it's humanity. It's humans and, you know, what it means to be a human. And, you know, you said that earlier on in the podcast that, you know, just you read it at a point in which, you know, you were, you know, still trying to understand things, or Robert Heinlein's books helped provide some kind of understanding. And that, you know, happened to me, you know, too. And because, I mean, as fun as his books are, there's a huge learning element to it. Like, you know, you're reading his books for pleasure, but there's also there's great knowledge to be, you know, had and found in these books. Like, there's, I mean, like he's a teacher, you know, his books have taught me a great deal, and they've certainly shaped the way, you know, I see life and other people, and to a wonderful sense. Like, you know, I love the people in my life. And, you know, just I think that, you know, just I have a sense of appreciation. I mean, and Robert Heinlein does that. You know, he has that effect.
The title of the book, Time Enough for Love, there's a quote in the book that the title is taken from, and it's that, like, you know, the more you love, the more you can love. And if there were time enough, you could learn to love everyone who was good and just. Or the vast majority of people that were good and just, I think. You know, that most people, that you could learn, you could love most people if there was enough time in the universe. And there's not, but I guess it's about how this character, Lazarus Long, does have all the time he could ever want. And over the course of, I think it's 4,000 years of living, by the time you get to the beginning of Time Enough for Love, he's determined there's nothing else for him to do but curl up and die.
I mean, yeah, and obviously he has a change of heart pretty quickly.
Well, yes, he agrees that because, you know, he's the oldest living human by a large amount, that he will write that he will dictate memoirs to someone, the former book, because he's, you know, such an important person, and he's, you know, pretty much everybody he ever interacts with is somehow related to him because he's been around for so long and he's been spreading his seed pretty profusely over that time. And so, you know, kind of everybody, and so they feel that it's important for this to happen. And over the course of most of the book is about him writing his memoirs. And by the time he's done, he's decided that there are still reasons to live, and he can, you know, he can still find new things to do and ways to be happy. I thought, yeah, it's just an incredible book.
I mean, there's a couple of things that you said that I think are worth, you know, focusing on. It almost just goes to show you that, like, you know, even at the lowest point, or what would seem like the lowest point, you know, sometimes all you need is to just hang on and be a little patient, and something is bound to change the way you see life and obviously give you some kind of hope. And, you know, it's like, as you said, Lazarus Long at the start of the tale is, you know, just down in the dumps, just doesn't, you know, see the point, doesn't have any motivation to live. And soon enough, he finds it. He just sticks around and remembers what's important. And, you know, I think that speaks for his Robert Heinlein's works in general. Like, it's about what is important and just, you know, just gets you in touch with what matters. And in this book, you know, love matters.
In classic Lazarus Long form, the thing that ends up making him decide he wants to keep living is a woman. Or several women, actually.
I mean, if there is any purpose to be had in life, for that matter, it might very well to love and be loved. I mean, that's the argument of this book. If I were to sum it up.
If you were to sum up 700 pages of fantastic book.
Yeah, which, you know, there you go. And another thing you said is, you know, like, Lazarus Long lives long enough to become his own ancestor, and, you know, during that time of living and loving and being loved, you know, he ends up, you know, procreating quite a bit, to the point where, you know, I guess the definition of incest must be changed. There's this, you know, like, one quote that says, yeah, this is from the book, and, you know, I'm trying to be serious now. I'm not trying to just, you know, like, having a serious talk here. They say he's a shameless old goat whose seed is scattered all through this part of the galaxy, and basically everybody becomes related in some capacity or some sense. And
right, you know, he just meets somebody and he's like, oh, I'm your fifth cousin twice removed and your seventh times great-granddaughter. And he's like, okay.
I mean, if ever there was a book about, you know, David Lee Roth or Gene Simmons in the future living long enough to, you know, rock on, it's this one.
Yeah, I mean, the cover of the book that I have and that Doug has is, you know, this just kind of symbolizes a lot of the book, I'd say. Is it's got a dude wearing a kilt sitting in a chair with three beautiful women around him. And I think one of them may be naked, if I recall. And it just kind of, you know, that he spends the book just talking about all the love that he's had in his life and, you know, how he goes on to find new ways to love in the future.
And, you know, I think that what's important about this, you know, especially to, I guess, what could be considered impressionable, you know, young, you know, individuals such as us when we found this, is that, you know, there's this idea that, I mean, love, you know, like eroticism, I mean, it is very much human, and it is simultaneously, there's something so transcendent about it that, you know, just, it gives this character a new meaning of life. It's somehow, I mean, it's a great metaphor in a sense for just how, you know, just impassioned and just, I mean, I don't know what else to say. I think that, you know, just like, yeah, like it's obviously, it's human. It's, I mean, there's obviously, like, you know, as we said, there's so many great, great things that he comments on, you know, from like politics, society, religion, and, you know, like human sexuality is, you know, one of them, but, you know, it's
probably one of the biggest ones, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, but it's, I mean, again, Robert Heinlein, his books, this one in particular, they show us what it means to be human. That's what great books, that's what stories and art does. And, you know, just, yeah, this is an important part. So it's like, so yeah, I mean, there you go.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the parts that, the central part of the book, I would say, is focused on Lazarus Long telling stories as part of his memoirs. And so, for example, one of the stories that really touches me, and like I had tears in my eyes at the end of the section, was about his life as a pioneer on a planet, and he, you know, he rescues this 4-year-old girl from a fire, and essentially throughout the book, you know, throughout the story, he raises her. And when she comes of age, he decides it's time to leave. But she wants to marry him. And so they get married. They go off and start lives as pioneers. And then they have family, start up a town. And, you know, it's just wonderful. And, you know, it goes through the end of her life. And then once she dies, he leaves. I thought, when I was thinking about it, that, like, there's no way that, you know, you or I, Doug, could ever have a relationship like that, where we stay relatively the same age and we see another person go through all the stages of their life and get to know someone on an intimate level. In fact, I'm thinking the only kind of relationship that we have that relates to that in terms of seeing somebody over the course of their lifetime is, say, like, you know, your pet. That you don't change too much in age, but you see the pet go from a newborn to an old dog, essentially.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're touching upon moments that, you know, really also had a very, I mean, it hit me hard, and I had tears in my eyes too. And there's this one beautiful bit, I mean, where basically, like, Dora is, you know, she's much, much older, and she is just kind of self-conscious about being old and just noticeably older, and Lazarus Long is just still young, and but
he's wearing makeup.
Yeah, but, you know, that doesn't change the way he feels about her. Like, he still cares about her. Like, I mean, even after all this time, even if she looks, you know, older, and I think that, I mean, what can you say? I mean, it's just such a powerful moment that, you know, you have two individuals who spend their life with each other, and just, you know, just, it couldn't matter less that she doesn't look as young or beautiful or whatnot as she once did. The point is, there's something more to it that, like, I'm kind of, it's hard to talk about this. It's honestly so powerful and just so intense and beautiful.
Right. And it's, it's just one of those things that you read and it's just, you know, it's not like it's sad. It's not like you're just thinking about it and the relationship that they have. It's just so incredible in a lot of ways. But I also, I just want to touch on, the first story that he tells is about the man who is too lazy to fail, which I know is one of your favorites.
I mean, clearly this little vignette or story in Time Enough for Love was not written about George Costanza from Seinfeld, clearly.
George Costanza wasn't quite lazy enough to fail.
Not quite. But I mean, just the tale of the man who was too lazy to fail. Like, I mean, that's brilliant. I mean, let's get into it. I mean, it's a pretty important part of the book. It's certainly a story that's near and dear to Lazarus Long's heart and addition
of
mine. Yeah,
I think Lazarus looks back kindly upon this guy. Because I think he was like a next door neighbor or something like that.
You never know with Lazarus Long.
He lived on Earth.
Yeah.
In the early 20th century. And essentially he spent his life trying to figure out how he could work less. And so he decides, working on the farm's hard. I guess the military isn't so hard. Isn't as hard as farming. And then he joins the military and he goes, well, I don't like swabbing decks. So I want to become an officer, so he gets to spend 4 years at the Naval Academy. And then he gets out of the Naval Academy, he says, well, I can spend 2 more years in flight school. So he goes and spends 2 more years in flight school, and it just compounds and compounds and compounds. And he finds ways of spending time learning new skills and things like that as an alternative to working hard. And eventually he winds up being able to retire with admiral's benefits, despite the fact he never achieved the rank. and he does it, and then he's able to retire young and just do whatever and be lazy the rest of his life. He also took advantage of some government programs, right, Doug?
Yes. A little history lesson here, boys and girls. During FDR's presidency, there was a little thing called the Great Depression. And during this Great Depression, Il Presidente decided to have these programs to try to jumpstart the economy, get capital flowing. And one of these programs that President FDR created was AAA, Agricultural Adjustment Agency, which basically paid farmers not to produce because there was an overabundance of certain crops, this and that, and I guess you can say this little tale in Time Enough for Love is some kind of social critique or satire, if you will.
Yeah, because Robert Heinlein is very, very, very libertarian, if you've read, especially The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, I would say. That it's painstakingly obvious that he's a very libertarian.
I can't resist the temptation to comment on The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, so I'm not going to, in honor of Lazarus Long. That has to be one of Robert Heinlein's best written books, for people out there who think, like, science fiction, if Robert Heinlein's just a storyteller, if it's all plot, read The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, because, he's also a wordsmith. I mean, that book is, in terms of language and word choices.
There ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
No, indeed.
although he did invent that phrase, he used it extensively in the book.
Yeah. just wanted to get that in there. But also, just to sort of take it full circle with FDR, satire, Agricultural Adjustment Agency, this character that Lazarus Long's telling a story about, the man too lazy to fail, he decides to take advantage of, free money from the government.
Not Matthew Lesko.
Yeah, not the alchemist from the Venture Bros. So he decides to be a farmer and get paid to do nothing. The story ends on a very lovely sort of note. So ends the tale of the man who was too lazy to fail. Let's leave him there in his hammock under the shade tree. So far as I know, he is still there.
Yeah, and that's just a pretty magical way to go off into the sunset, I guess, for the man who's too lazy to fail.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bradley. And I think, you know, we're talking about a story, like, you know, that Lazarus Long tells. That's a story that, you know, this is near and dear to his heart as much as it is to your heart and my heart.
Right, he's telling the story for a reason.
Exactly. And, you know, they kind of preface this, you know, the imaginary, like, authors or editors of this text, Time Enough for Love, they say that Lazarus Long's tale is comprised of blatant falsehoods, self-serving allegations, and many amoral anecdotes not suitable for young persons.
Which is certainly, certainly true.
Exactly. Abandon all hope, ye who enter.
Yeah, I mean, if you do want to read the book, make sure you're over about 16 or so, I would say.
Yeah, that's a good age. That's when I picked it up, so.
Yeah, you wouldn't want a 15-year-old reading that, 15 or 13-year-old reading that book.
And they might not even appreciate it, like, you
know. Yes. Yeah, so it'd be like asking a 10-year-old to read Dune.
yeah, or watch Seinfeld. yeah, and we had mentioned that, you know, just this book is chock full of commentary about all sorts of things, politics, religion, just society. It's kind of satirical in a sense, too. And honestly, this book, you can just turn to any single page, just any page, just
you
open
can divine,
it up at random.
You can divine it. Do you know what divination is, Douglas?
What is divination, Bradley?
Divination is a practice where you take a book, flip open a page, stick your finger on a line, and that's your fortune for fortune telling.
Oh, Bradley, have you ever told the audience that you can speak with the dead? You can channel dead people? You did this with me one time.
Yeah, yes. yes, I've demonstrated to Doug the leading questions and stuff like that that psychics and people like John Edwards use. It's shown extensively on South Park how easy it is.
Bradley, you're too modest and humble. Like,
but yeah. So what were we discussing? We were discussing
opening up to any single page of this book, and you'll find something brilliant. Any
Don't
page.
Do it with the Bible. That is supposedly bad news bears for your soul. But other books, it's apparently okay. This is a book you can do it with. If you open it up, there's something useful on every page to read that gives you a little insight into life.
I mean, I have my copy of Time Enough for Love, you know, next to me, and there's
very jealous.
Oh, it's so good. Honestly, this whole podcast makes me want to read it. Like, that is how good, like, this book is, and almost every book I've read by Robert Heinlein is like that. But face each sunrise as if wait where is it face each sunrise as a fresh creation and live for it joyously.
Yeah, that sums up kind of the way Lazarus Long feels about the world. Now I got another quote for you.
Tell me.
Always store beer in a dark place.
Ooh.
Words of wisdom.
Oh, absolutely. It should be interesting to note, you know, we're talking a book about love, and so many people, there's so many definitions of love. It's a theme that's been, you know, looked at for a very long period of time. And, you know, just especially over, you know, Robert Heinlein's books. And I believe he says that love is the condition in which the happiness of another is as important as yours.
I think it's that love is the condition where your happiness is depends. Let me find it real quick.
Good idea.
Or that your happiness is conditioned on someone else's happiness, I think.
Another person, I guess, and to paraquote it, another person's happiness is, you know, certainly, like, important on a level that your happiness is, I guess.
Right. Let's see. Love is the condition in which the happiness of another person is essential to your own.
There you go.
That's from Stranger in a Strange Land.
I mean, hey, like, I guess we could call this the Robert Heinlein cast, but, you know, it's like another great book that explores love at great length and from almost the perspective of somebody who hasn't a man born in Mars who comes to live with humans and has to learn what it means to love and be loved. And it's the first Heinlein book I ever read, and it was brilliant. I love the scene in Stranger in a Strange Land when Valentin Michael Smith is
he's the Martian,
and he gets kind of like this nurse who's been looking after him kind of breaks him out because he's like being people want to exploit the man from Mars for, you know, sort of self gain. Like everybody wants a piece of the action, but she kind of takes him away from this hospital that she's working in because she realizes that, you know, trouble's going to come. And she takes him to this apartment, and like he gets, like there's this scene where he's like in a sort of tub, and it's just a really like beautiful and just an amazing scene. I think that was the moment in which like I truly fell in love with the works of Robert Heinlein. Like at that moment when he's getting like a bath from the first woman he's ever seen in his entire life. And there's just something so profound and beautiful all at once. And just loving.
Yeah. I think important to note here, Stranger in a Strange Land is an important enough book that Billy Joel considered it to have started the fire or been responsible for starting the fire a little bit.
Bradley, you know, I'm not a
part of
fan.
The fire. I'm not sure in the metaphor of that, but Stranger in a Strange Land is mentioned in We Didn't Start the Fire.
I'm not a big Billy Joel fan. His music I'm not a big fan of, I should say.
Well, there you go.
I can't believe he made it into the podcast. I'm devastated, Bradley.
He's devastated. But Billy Joel, when he's listing off things, one of the things is Stranger in a Strange Land.
And that's why science fiction gets a bad rap, because of Billy Joel.
Well, I guess one of the things that, like, you know, on a recurring basis that I deal with a lot with this book is there's in between two of the short stories. So between The Man Who's Too Lazy to Fail, and then there's a middle one that's about a pair of twins who are genetically entirely different, and they start a restaurant. And then the third one is about Dora. And so in between those two, there are small chapters that are, quote, excerpts from the text that are selected quotes from the memoirs that go in between there. And it's really an excuse for Robert Heinlein just to pass on some advice, or for, you know, Lazarus Long to just pass us some direct advice. And it's, frankly, some of the most brilliant quotations you'll ever read. And they're all available online. I'm going to link them in the podcast, on the podcast website. I'm going to provide a link for them. But I thought I might read a few of them for you guys and see how you react, Doug.
Bradley's reading of Lazarus Long quotes is some of the best reading I've ever heard. Like, if they could somehow record you reading Lazarus Long tapes, I would listen to that and go to sleep at night, because it is so... let's get into it. I just thought to give you an introduction. Here we go.
I pulled out a few of these, and so I'm just going to mention them and talk about them. So, start off with... One man's theology is another man's belly laugh.
Yeah, what can you say? I mean, it's pretty clear and to the point.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show that, you know, just that people, you know, if you don't share, you know, you take your religion very seriously, but there's certainly someone else out there who doesn't take your religion seriously. You know, the way we treat Scientology, for instance. You know, there are people who believe that wholeheartedly, and we say Xenu and spaceships and volcanoes, and it seems ridiculous to us. But
and the flying spaghetti monster kind of illustrates the point of how ridiculous, like, some kind of being in the sky can be, to what, you know, lengths people take it. You know, it's very pragmatic, I would say, kind of, you know, not real. It's focused more on, like, humanity, not necessarily living for the sake of an afterlife. You know, it's about, you know, living life, and, you know, just I think that's a perfect quote and kind of setting the tone of, you know, what you know, this book is about, which is living and loving. Like, don't just waste your life just, you know, kind of on an assumption that may or may not come to pass. You'll know soon enough.
Yep, and that's another one of the quotes essentially says that.
Yeah.
But here's another one. A competent and self-confident person is incapable of jealousy in anything. Jealousy is invariably a symptom of neurotic insecurity.
I love that line because I think I have a tendency to get jealous, and so whenever I do, that's kind of like a good mantra to say and get my head, you know, get me focused on what really counts. And, you know, we were talking about how, you know, he's just kind of, you know, Robert Heinlein's books kind of offer a glimpse as to, you know, ways to live and, you know, just kind of good outlooks. And that's absolutely one of them. You know, it's easy for me to, you know, get jealous, but like, you know, when I think of that quote, it's like, no, like this is absolutely right. Like, you know, and there, it comes from a place of truth, I would say. So.
Okay. Here's another one. Yield to temptation. It may not pass your way again.
There you go.
I think that's pretty clear what he's talking about there.
Again, passes that quote passes through my mind too. Yes. From time to time.
From time to time.
Yeah.
If everybody knows such and such, then it ain't so by at least 10,000 to one.
I mean, I guess we could break that down like a little bit. Like, you kind of explained this quote to me when...
Right. I mean, the way I see it is that if somebody has to justify justifying their argument, everybody knows such and such. There's nothing to back it up. It's a way of telling everybody, oh, you should go along with my assumption.
Like, yeah, the argument, well, everybody thinks this, or everybody does this, or if you had to ask a million people what they would think of this, then they would agree with me, and that's, this kind of...
Right, it's an argument from plural of everybody thinking it, therefore it must be right, which is obviously a very fallacious argument.
There's this other, I mentioned, like, during our Costanza cast when we were getting into philosophy, I have kind of a quote page, and one of the quotes that I'm bringing into this art, like, you know, to kind of provide context or understanding of the Robert Heinlein quote we just read, it's by Søren Kierkegaard, and he says, I think you'll see where I'm going with this. As soon as it has come to the point that the crowd is to judge what is truth, it will not be long before decisions are made with fists. And, you know, Robert Heinlein is all about, like, when in history have the majority been right? You know, it's he's got some quotes about democracy that, you know, I don't know if you're going to get into that, but
no, I didn't include those in my short list.
I guess we could bring it up right now. Like, democracy relies on the assumption that, you know, just the majority of,
or that million people are smarter than one person,
or they're smart enough to,
or wiser than one person.
Yeah, something like that. So I mean, that, like. I mean, do you want to read the quote that you just read one more time, just so it's, like, fresher or whatnot?
Yeah, if everybody knows such and such, then it ain't so by 10,000 to 1.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a perfect, you know, Robert Heinlein ethos. You know, you mentioned the libertarian values espoused in The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. Like, it's, you know, he's a writer very much about the individual, just,
Yeah, like, and, I guess, you know, it's not so much that as he's relying, you know, if you require that as part of your argument, then you can bet the rest of the argument is pretty faulty too. I think what he's trying to say there is that's an indicator that something's off if somebody's saying that.
Well, let me ask you something now. I guess I'm asking you for your own personal, like, or belief or whatnot.
Shraggy.
I mean, do you think that kind of idea takes it away from the fact that, well, like, for instance, if I have in an argument to say that everybody else thinks this way, that kind of diminishes the fact that I believe this or I think that. And I think that, you know, it's like, I mean, it shouldn't have to be about what other people think, you know, right. If it's what I believe.
An idea should stand on its own justifications, not from the fact that other people believe it. That's essentially what I have to say on that. That if an argument can't stand on its own in a vacuum, then it doesn't stand.
I think
because people believe it or want to believe it and things like that.
Yeah, would you say it's almost better to, you know, the truth is better than being right, necessarily?
Yes, I'd say that. And, you know, I don't want to dive into cognitive dissonance and things like that, but those all come into play when you're dealing with those kinds of feelings and thoughts.
Not totally. All right, do you have another quote for us, Bradley?
I got lots of quotes.
All right.
We're gonna have to skip through these kind of fast.
All right, go through it.
All right. A motion to adjourn is always in order.
I texted you that once just as a joke. It was...
Yeah.
Just for silly. It's a good one.
It's a good quote. All right. So, taxes are not levied for the benefit of the taxed. That's a good one. That's the libertarian side coming out.
It's a good example of that libertarian side.
Yes, that basically he's saying if you're taking money from one person to spend on the other, that one person could spend the money on it anyway.
Yeah.
That's kind of the thought there. Let's see. Never appeal to a man's better nature. He may not have one.
Ned Stark from Game of Thrones should have heard that one.
Yes. I think that's a great line. Because, you know, you think about... It's a fallacy that's something that people go against all the time. They say, if we do this, you know, they'll go and, you know, these people want democracy or something along those lines. And... in reality, no. The rest of the quote is, invoking his self-interest gives you more leverage. That just because you tell somebody, oh, this is for the greater good, it doesn't probably work. That probably doesn't work on most people.
It's funny. Like, they're...
That he may not have one is the funny part of that line.
And I think what's more important than necessarily worrying about a lot of, you know, the majority or everybody seeing the truth is just focus on the people, you know, who matter. Think about your audience, your small audience. I mean, like, I don't know, this kind of reminds me of Atlas Shrugged a little bit. Just like, stop thinking about the fact that other, you know, people may not catch on to the truth. They may want to avoid it. They would rather run away from a hard truth than face it, as Tyrion Lannister says in Game of Thrones. And it's like, yeah, it's not, that couldn't matter less. You know, what matters is, you know, the people in your life, the important ones, you know. It's like, not everybody will want to face the truth, or, you know, just not everybody may have a better, you know, like, side, as you say, from that quote.
All right, another good one for you. Certainly the game is rigged. Don't let that stop you. If you don't bet, you can't win.
I love it.
I love that one, too, because, you know, we tend to be very risk-averse. That we don't want to be rejected, we don't want, we don't want to be rejected, we don't want to be turned down. But you gotta remember, if you don't bet, you can't win. And I wouldn't suggest that as advice for playing the lottery, but in lots of other aspects of life and personal relationships and things like that, it's something that certainly I keep in mind.
To quote Han Solo, never tell me the odds.
Never tell me the odds. That's you're finding some philosophy in Star Wars.
I think we both do. I think that they're... Yes. Not, the Star Wars trilogy, not the prequels.
Right. All right. Money is a powerful aphrodisiac, but flowers work almost as well.
Yeah.
It's just nice.
It's nice, yeah. Flowers are nice.
Thou shalt remember the 11th commandment and keep it holy.
Just very witty.
Do you remember what the 11th commandment is?
Remember the other commandments?
I remember the 11th commandment better than I remember the rest of them. What's the 11th commandment, Doug?
My mind's a blank, Bradley.
Don't get caught.
Mm-hmm. Fair
That's
enough.
An important one. Don't get caught.
Don't get caught.
All right. Here's another one that that goes probably better advice for playing the lottery. There is no such thing as social gambling. Either you're there to cut the other bloke's heart out and eat it, or you're a sucker. If you don't like this choice, don't gamble.
That's very kind of. It's like kill or be killed kind of mentality.
Yeah, and essentially it says that if you're not there to win everything you can and to take and to try to, you know, and to try to get make the other guy go broke and all the rest, you're going to be parted with your money. And he doesn't say there's anything wrong with being a sucker. It just says you are one.
It's just the truth. It's neither good nor bad. It's what you are.
Yes. All right. This is a great libertarian quote. Be wary of strong drink. It can make you shoot at tax collectors and miss. That's just funny.
I think you had sent that in a random text to me one night, and that put a smile on my face.
It always makes me smile.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It may be better to be a live jackal than a dead lion, but it is better still to be a live lion, and usually easier.
I mean,
I feel like that's a really profound quote, because
it's great.
People talk about like being pragmatic and not following your values, and or hanging back and not asserting yourself when you have to, because, you know, lion kills the animals and is in charge, but the, you know, the jackal comes in afterwards to scrape up the scraps, you know. And basically what they're saying, you know, and the jackal can't stand up to the lion, but the lion takes the brunt of the damage. And so I just like that quote, because people will argue you should be the jackal, and this is kind of an inversion on the quote. You know, that there's a third choice there. I just thought that was really good.
It's a damn good quote, Bradley.
All right. So, if it can't be expressed in figures, it is not science, it is opinion.
And everybody's got an opinion.
Everybody's got an opinion. I think it's just a good way of, that when people talk about sciences and stuff like that, that there's, when they talk about in non-quantitative means and they talk qualitatively about science, it's something to remember that, you know, if it's speaking qualitatively, they're trying to fool you in some way. They're trying to make you believe something, and numbers can lie, but it's harder to make numbers lie than to make words lie. And if it's not quantitative, it's not science. I think that's a good way of putting it. As a member of the broader scientific community, myself.
Touche.
All right. Money is truthful. If a man speaks of his honor, make him pay cash. Now, that's another one. Ned Stark probably wouldn't want to hear that one.
Probably would make him uncomfortable.
I think it's a good one, because, generally if somebody's talking about their honor or whatever, you know, it's to try to avoid... It's to try to avoid paying now. And that, you know, that's, I think, is the circumstance that he's talking about. Is don't let somebody skip down just because they say they have morals.
Morals, as they, you know, say, get in the way of doing what's right.
Yeah. And my final quote that I have is, everything in excess. To enjoy the flavor of life, take big bites. Moderation is for monks.
It's another good one that's, you know, kind of popped into my head from one moment to the next in certain instances in life. And it's a good quote to wrap up on.
It's a great quote. I think it kind of expresses the way Lazarus Long lives his life. Is that when he finds something that he wants to do, he wallows in it and takes it all in. And he always is going all in. When he wants to do something, he commits to it fully. Let's see, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I mean, I just wanted to say it's been an absolute pleasure doing this podcast, because this has really reminded me of what is important, and I mean, so I wanted to add that. And just read Robert Heinlein. I want to reread him and read the other books that I haven't, you know, gotten to yet. I mean, I wanted to just, you know, really say that it's been an absolute joy, blast, and pleasure, and learning experience for me, just getting back to, you know, a character and story and writer who has and continues to, you know, play a very important part of my life. Like, and this book came at a very important moment. And I mean, I don't know what would have happened if I didn't read this, but I know that I'm sitting here right now with you having a podcast about something that is near and dear to my heart. And I'm just really glad we could take this time to do this.
Yeah, so. I'm glad we could talk about it. I guess, you know, before we send off, this is our 10th podcast, by the way. We made it a long ways. And I think we might, you know, if you just wanted to share with everybody what Robert Heinlein books you've read, and I'll share which ones I've read, and there's none of them I wouldn't recommend, I guess. There's one I'd hold off on, but that I can think of, but... Yeah, what books by Heinlein can you remember that you've read? Because there's a lot.
And I could think of no better way to end this podcast than this kind of conversation. Like, I live for these conversations, Bradley. And, you know, I just love, you know, just... Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is like a sort of, like, top Robert Heinlein books or just, you know, like, what... I mean, just read... Just whatever way you can get into Robert Heinlein, do it. Because he's made a difference to me in my life. And... If there is that chance that it might make a difference to you, like, you know, you can't win if you don't bet. So it's like, you know, just take the chance. You know, you just might, things might never be the same again. But I first read Stranger in a Strange Land. That was my first entryway into Robert Heinlein. And I've never been the same since. And after that, I read Starship Troopers, which was the first time, I mean, obviously there was that movie Starship Troopers, and that's how I first heard about him, but... You know, it's like, it looked like the book and the movie were totally different things, and they are, so I didn't start with that first, but...
In a good way, they're totally different.
In a good way. I mean, Starship Troopers isn't my favorite, but I enjoyed it a lot. Moon is a Harsh Mistress, I think for people who, like, I absolutely love it, you know, great story, great philosophy, and great writing. Like, people who want to see Robert Heinlein as, you know, the wordsmith, like, I guess the... For English students, English majors in college, that would be a good one to check out. It's kind of been compared to Clockwork Orange in the sense that he kind of creates his own language. And it takes place on a lunar penal colony, which kind of explains why the language is a little bit off, because it's kind of set off from the rest of the world. Time Enough for Love, that's what we did today. Glory Road, my friend's dad says he rereads that book like every few years. It's
almost as good as Thunder Road.
Almost as good. But, and as far as I'm, I mean, they haven't made a movie off of Glory Road yet, and they really should, because it's, I mean, it'd be a great, great film, especially with the technology today. And I also read this sort of juvenile book, this children's book that Robert Heinlein did. He wrote a lot of children's books, or books geared towards young adults when, before he got into the much more notable books, and he wrote a book called Citizen of the Galaxy, and it's not the best Robert Heinlein book, and you can definitely tell that he's still, like, you know, an author with promise when you dig into it, but it was good enough, and I enjoyed it, but, I mean, I think that's, I'm pretty sure that's all I've read by him, but... what about you, Bradley? And what are the books that... I know you've read more Robert Heinlein than me, so if you can... I mean, I don't know if you have any recommendations or just kind of where should I go next? I mean...
I'm just looking really quickly at his bibliography on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And let's see, I've read Methuselah's Children, which was written in 1958, which is a long time ago. And that's about Lazarus Long and... His early life as the first interplanetary space traveler, essentially, with him and some of his relatives. And that's a fun book. Starship Troopers, I've read. Stranger in a Strange Land, I've read. Glory Road, I'm working on as we speak. The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, I've read. Twice, probably, I think. Time Enough for Love, I've read. And I read his last novel, because I picked it up at a book fair for $1. It's called To Sail Beyond the Sunset. Actually, before I get into that one, I did read one. It was called Revolt in 2100 by him. That was good. That was totally different than the rest of them, but it was good. And Sail Beyond the Sunset is his last work, and it's about Lazarus Lone's mother. And if you've read a lot of his stuff and like it already, it's pretty good, but if you're not generally a Heinlein fan, or if you're just getting into him, I wouldn't read that book till later. Just because it requires knowing him and his work very well to appreciate it. You know, it's the last book he wrote. He wrote it like a few years before. He wrote it. It was published the year before he died. So, yeah. You have any you'd like to close out for us, Douglas?
I did have one thing that I wanted to bring up before we close up, which is that Robert Heinlein actually went to the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. And it just so happens that our co-host here, Bradley Riddle, is also kind of
native in the said area.
Exactly. So I just thought that, just a fun little fact, a little kind of connection between you and Robert Heinlein here. So yeah. Just wanted to, fun little fact. Just
of course, he was at the Naval Academy in the 1920s. So. I guess, he graduated in 1929. I just read that from the Naval Academy. So that was a bit before my time.
A bit before.
He died right after I was born and before you were born, so.
Yeah.
So his books were all written, the ones that you'll read and enjoy the most were written in the late 50s to mid 70s, which is kind of when he was at his height and most prolific.
So... I'm glad we could do this, Bradley. This was near and dear to my heart, this podcast, and I'm glad we could do this. So thank you.
And, okay, yeah, it's great. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.